The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Ticket Stock, and Tuesday, the 18th of July, 2023. I'm John Byrne. John, you're right, fella.
Not too bad, Aiden.
Yeah, I'm all right. Do you know what? By the way, if you are watching this on YouTube, by all means, comment there and subscribe and follow and share if you could. Because I want to build this up, get a good chat going. And I want to start off, John, today with sort of business macro news, because I think it's a very important bit of news coming out. And this is about groceries. And we saw now, you know, inflation coming down is an issue at the moment with, you know, sticky inflation. And they said today that grocery prices are coming down and they've been very sticky. And I find this very, I'm very cynical in this. I thought it's amazing how the spotlight, you know, was put on supermarkets and all these people about not bringing their prices down. And all of a sudden they are coming down after MPs and all that have, you know, put the spotlight on them. But they say grocery inflation remains incredibly high, but falls for the fourth straight month thanks to supermarket promotions. So we are. They're promoting there, and they say, in fact, it's still, I think it is 14.9%. That's the growth in inflation here. But it's down from 16.5%. And but the thing is, what's important here, right, is that the latest drop comes as supermarkets ramp up promotions with spending on them up for the first time in 2 years, accounting for 25.2% of the market. So they could actually have brought the figures down or numbers down for a long time, but they haven't chosen to. But I think it's very important, this, because apart from Aldi being the fastest growing supermarket, almost doubling the next Sainsbury's sales grew by 10.7%, but Aldi was up by 24%. But the Bank of England tomorrow, big figures out tomorrow on CPI, which is inflation data. Now, its forecast come in at 8.2, down from 8.7 last month. But the core CPI was that they look at, and this is forecast at 7.1%, previously 7.1%. It hasn't come down.
It's sticky. Sticky. Well, we know that. It's we import a lot of food. it's one of the problems we've spoken about.
Yeah, but core CPI, it's basically measures in the changes of the price of goods and services, excluding food and energy. So it's a measure of price from perspective of the consumer. So it's everything apart from that, like rents. And I don't think, is it mortgage? I don't know. But the thing is, what I'm saying is this, right? If inflation does come down, if CPI comes down at 8.2, which is quite a big drop from the 11.1 we had a couple of months back, then I think the markets will rally very strongly. I think tomorrow, this number here, CPI, tomorrow is a market moving number. And because the Bank of England will take a steer from that and they'll say whether it be more aggressive or less aggressive. And so tomorrow, this figure is very important. If it's above estimates, then it's not going to be good for the markets.
I mean, it's all sort of short term noise, really, in the grand scheme of things. You know, it's the markets might rally, but you know, if they miss, they might not. I mean, we're sort of, you know, we're tossing coins here, really. And for me, like, you know, betting on a sort of short term trajectory of inflation isn't really how you should go about investing.
No, but I don't think the thing is it short term? If the trajectory is going down, it's not short term, is it?
It was always going to go down. I mean, what we're not seeing, I mean, you know, if you think about the sort of level of supermarket inflation, prices aren't coming down. They're going up less quickly.
Yes, but that's it, the trajectory. That's what I'm saying. So if, you know, we get a slowdown, then this will start slowing down faster and faster because the economy is not growing. You know, as you see from those promotions, people are being more savvy about what they're buying. So they are reining in their spend. That is what the effect that the Bank of England want to happen, isn't it? You know, reining the spend, and people are doing that. And I often get my wife coming back to the supermarket saying, God, the price of this has gone up so much. And so it's just avoid buying it. And she's got a loyalty app with Asda. She goes to Aldi as well. So I think I think it'll be a boost for the market. We need a boost anyway. Come on, John, you bear.
I'm not a bear. I mean, I'm just the pragmatist. I mean, you know, you look at those numbers there. You know, in the document, Sainsbury's sales up to 10.7%, Asda and Tesco up 10.5% and 10.2%. Well, guess what? They're not growing. headline level, really, because food supermarket inflation is higher than that. So, you know, I think what you're seeing here is, you know, you'll see a market shift. Promotions will affect their profitability. They've tried to make as much money as possible while they could. You know, there is a case that a lot of price increases that we've seen, certainly across food and beverages, were basically profiteering, greedflation. As it's been dubbed. You know, it's no surprise that Audi is the fastest growing grocer because they price less aggressively. They're fairer to their customers.
Yeah, they're trying to rip off people. That's what I hate about a while back, saying we're not profiteering, the supermarkets have been saying.
Well, they're petrol retailers as well. And that, you know, the petrol retail industry has been found to have been keeping prices artificially high. And, you know, now there's a scheme coming in which will force them to show live pricing. They have been making excess profits because they've been able to, hide, profit-driven price increase rather than inflation-driven price increases. And I think this is bad news in the long term for, you know, these supermarket giants. It's a market shift. You know, discounters will win the day here. They're getting bigger and bigger and bigger all the time.
It comes down to the fact of, you know, for a while back, I think it was Sainsbury's who said we're not profiteering from higher prices. Well, I did say at the time, I think you disagreed though, but
I haven't been in the Sainsbury's for a long time because quite frankly, it's a dreadful supermarket.
I said, hang on a sec, Sainsbury's have released their figures, they're not loss making, they are making a profit. And they have put their prices up. So they are sort of profiteering. It's not as if they took it on the chin, you know. They are paying dividends. And I meant to look at this. I would like to see the margins that these companies have. I don't think they've gone down. So if they haven't gone down, then they are sort of profiteering because they're just raising margins within. Their margins haven't suffered. I know the margins are wafer thin in supermarkets, but they haven't really cut their margins. So, but I'm all I'm saying is I think tomorrow is one of those days where, you know, in the UK, inflation has been sticky for a while. And if if we see the trajectory coming down, if it hits forecasts, I think that could be a very good day for the market. And we sort of need it, I think. That's, by the way, that's a 2-year bond there. It peaked out. I mean, look at the chart on this. It's a 10 bagger from going back to 2021, minus pretty much close to. And then now we're at 5.12. But it did peak out there at 5.6, 5.7. So maybe it's rolling over. Hopefully it does come down. Yeah.
No, I must admit, I mean, I'm, you know, and I don't want to sound grumpy. Maybe I'm a bit grumpy today, but, you know, I'm so bored with this monetary policy driving markets thing. Of course, it has an effect, you know, on how you value growth companies, how you value, you know, future cash flows. No doubt about it. That's a factor of the markets, which is arguably, you know, with low interest rates, flattered equities for many, many, many years. You know, to the point where I think it, to a large extent, many people have actually forgotten how to actually find a good business and value it. I'm grumpy when it comes to this constant focus on what will the Fed do, what will the Bank of England do. You know, let's just go out there and find good businesses. The bottom line.
Yeah, you know, it is annoying. I know, but the trouble is, this day and age, you can find a good business and the share price, it doesn't really rise.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether it rises today. It's whether it matters over...
It hasn't risen for 18 months.
Yeah, but so what? We've been in a bear market for 18 months. Yeah, let's think about the next 18 months or the one beyond that. You know, we're not trading.
I'm annoyed at it. I know. I'm annoyed at the bloody market. It's like, come on.
Don't be annoyed at the market. The market is just a thing.
It's not easy. It's never going to be easy to make money in the markets, but it's never going to be this tough. You know, it shouldn't be this tough. I mean, and we are sort of bottoming, and it's just frustrating at the moment.
It isn't easy. Investing isn't easy. It seemed easy when we had monetary policy was very supportive. Now we're getting a dose of reality.
Money costs, isn't it? I mean, money's been free for a long time. And when you get free money, people spend it on ridiculous things and ridiculous investments. Like I say, I mean, you know, we all know that the peak of the market was when celebrities were paying millions of pounds for gorilla pictures.
If you go back to the discussion we were having yesterday, you know, and actually we've had on several occasions before about, you know, how cheap the UK market is. Yeah. You know, investing might not be easy, but if you go out there, you know, and, you know, look at relative valuations relative to history, you know, relative to growth rates, And look across the UK market and find good companies that you will probably be able to get a lot more cheaply than you could some time ago. Then, you know, you buy them, they might not move for a bit, but so what? Because they will in the future. It's a good business. Go find a quality company, you know, respectably sensible valuation. And, you know, there were many times in the past years where valuations have just got out of control, and you'll do all right.
Yeah, yeah. I got a quick glance at the front page here of Vox. Myriad, first revenues sales despite US advertising. So
first half sales. Oh, Christ, that's a terrible headline, which I must admit.
I've Victor!
No, it's me. I edited it badly.
Oh, okay. you've also, I mean, Myriad, the thing is, they are burning a lot of cash, but they are in quite a sec space, but they do have quite a bit of cash. They've got about, I think it was about 9 million of cash. And I mean, they're burning it, but you know, it's a 3 million market cap, aren't they? So it's like, you know, how long will that cash last? As I say, if you bought up the stock of Myriad, all of it, and took it over, you'd walk away with a profit, a nice little profit, hopefully, depending on what they own. But Zotefoams. Tell us about Zotefoams, John.
It's a nice little company, actually. I looked at it this morning. We have looked at it before in the past. Zotefoams is basically a material specialist. And I think the deal it's announced today is really interesting. It's a joint development agreement. You can refresh that page now to get rid of my appallingly edited headline. There we go. Back to Zotefoams. It's a packaging company, joint development agreement with an unnamed world-leading provider of beverage packaging. Mm-hmm. And beverage packaging is a massive, massive business. You know, if you think about the companies involved, Tetra Laval is one of the biggest. And I do wonder whether this deal is with Tetra Laval, which makes the Tetra Pak, which I'm sure we've all got in our fridges, orange juice, milk, whatever. The problem with Tetra Paks is that they are made with, they're a sort of laminated material that's a mixture of sort of plastics and composites, cardboards and plastic tops, and they're really, really, really hard to recycle. Mm-hmm. So ubiquitous, impossible to recycle. You know, to recycle Tetra Paks where I live, you actually have to drive 20 miles and take them to a tip where they have a specialist Tetra Pak recycling bin. But a lot of
just set them on fire in the back garden.
Oh, that would do. Dig a hole. This is how you be sustainable. Anyway, so what Zotefoams has is a material that can be recycled, that can, you know, essentially act like a Tetra Pak in terms of the qualities. And the reason Tetra Pak is ubiquitous is because it's very, very good at you know, packaging beverages.
Yeah.
Keeps them fresh, you know, doesn't leak. Really, really fantastically designed product, which is why, you know, it's so successful. The material is the problem. Zotefoams potentially has the solution. It's basically working towards, you know, towards in-market trials with a major European retailer. So this is great news, you know, easily recyclable, can be essentially, you know, this packaging solution works with potential customers' existing filling and packaging machinery. So, you know, it doesn't require any customer to rip out its infrastructure. You know, all companies have got these net zero, you know, sustainability. There you go, headline change. Challenges to overcome. I think this is a massive deal, actually.
Okay.
Carton packaging market is worth $11 billion a year in North America and Western Europe. The overall packaging market is worth about $150 billion a year. So, you know, huge business this.
Yeah, okay. 168 million with your group revenue, 127. Good growth there. Operating margin, operating profit there. Okay, good, decent. Net debt 27. Okay.
Yeah, and let's have a look. And you know, you can buy that company on a forecast PE of 17. You know, I think given the potential, let's have a look at EPS growth for 2024. I mean, difficult year this year, EPS growth going into 2024, 19%. So, you know, you're not overpaying there for this. And this is you know, potentially offers material upside if these in market trials are successful.
Yeah, there's a chart there. A lot of these charts are this. There's a low in October, rally, a rollover currently, but in fact, not as bad as most companies. A lot of companies, I mean, AIM itself, the index, has rolled over and, you know, gone below that October low. So that's against the market. It's doing better than AIM, actually. So there's Zote Foams. Good interview yesterday by Oxford Cannabinoids, Breakthrough Oral Immunotherapy there with... is that Lauren's first video interview?
It's Lauren's first video interview. Yeah, he's did a great job. And it's a really, really interesting company. It's in the prescription cannabinoid, as the name would suggest, market with solutions for pain is the obvious one, pain management. And you know, if this again is an absolutely enormous market. And actually, if you think about some of the problems that we've seen over in the US in recent years around pain prescription drugs, which many of which have been opioid based, and they have caused enormous problems in America.
Yeah, it's worth watching a documentary on Netflix about that. It's phenomenal, the amount of people it changes to zombies, and then these drug factories. Crooked sort of GPs or doctors, basically just writing prescriptions, almost loads of them to sell them, and outside people just selling them. And of course, Prince and Michael Jackson both, had opioid addictions.
There's quite a lot, the list is very long.
Look, Clarissa there, she reminds me of something. I can't think who it was. It's like a TV presenter. I can't think who it was. But I thought I'd seen her before, surely.
It's really, really worth a listen. It's, really gives you a good idea what that company's doing. But this is a move into to basically oncology. And immunotherapy. So a long way to go, as Clarissa was quite, clearly pointed out. But this is a company that's got a lot of potential ahead of it. And some of its existing stuff is, well progressed in trials. So, one worth keeping an eye on.
Okay, let's look at the winners and losers here. One of the big winners is Darktrace. Of course, cybersecurity came to markets with a bit of a hoopla here. But there's two bits of news. One is a conclusion from Ernst & Young. They've given neither the management nor the board consider EY's report to have any impact on Darktrace's previously filed public company financial statements, nor to change their belief that those financial statements fairly represent. So, and also they just come up with a Q4 trading update. Basically, they're saying 31% revenue growth, 29.2% on constant currency, adjusted EBITDA margin of at least 22%. And how much is that today? Let's have a look at the chart here. So
19%, near enough.
No, I don't think it is. Okay. You're saying one of the guys involved there, is he now in jail in America or something?
I don't think so. But I think, there is.
He was extradited, wasn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, these things take years and years to resolve. Let's talk about the company. I mean, it had a whiff of, short ability about it. It had a whiff of those kind of companies that the short attackers go after. And that's that's happened to an extent here. To get a clean bill of health from an sort of audit as it is, basically as the auditors auditing the auditors, which I think of Grant Thornton in Darktrace's case is quite significant. Again, what I'm interested in is, what's the sort of profit growth trajectory here. We see a lot of tech companies that stay loss making for a very long time. And actually looking at Darktrace's forecasts, it's on the cusp now of actually becoming a genuinely profitable growth technology business. I'm looking at 2023 forecasts. We've got a bit of pre-tax in there, 48 million. We've got a bit of and then
2.4 billion pound company.
Yeah. So it's not making enough, at the moment to really support that valuation. But again, it's the future that we're looking at. It would have been hit by inflation, as I said, that mechanic effect on future cash flows and the valuation of future cash flows. But this is starting to happen.
This is a chart. In fact, we talked about this a while back. So I highlighted the chart. So this quite interesting here. It's breaking up here. You see, previously, and this sort of wedge here, this resistance here, and it broke above that, and it zoomed up above 200 day, and now it's calmed down and gapped up again today, which is now currently above that previous high, which is technically quite a good sign. So it may have to go a little sideways, but it's a big jump, 90% for a £2 billion company, or £2.5 billion company. It's a big jump.
Cybersecurity, it's massively important. We're all online. We all transact online all the time. We know there's lots of sort of bad actors out there in the internet world. trying to always, you know, part you with your cash. So it's in the right, and they are very clever people. You know, the fraudsters are very, very clever.
Yeah, you're either one step ahead or one step behind. You know, if you're one step behind, you've got to make sure you close that window that they got in through, kick them out and close the window.
That's what it's not just fraudsters either. I mean, you know, I think I saw a report earlier this week, you know, there's pretty much, no, you know, no company in the UK has not been compromised. No large company of any note has not been compromised by foreign agents hacking into their systems. So, you know, it's serious business.
So losers, Pilatro, they're down 45%, and they are 2.13, and they specialise enterprise class software solution for customers engagement, principally in telcos. Now, if you look at this, a trading update, essentially they, you know, a key customer who owes, you know, 550,000, they said will no longer meet the previously agreed payment deadline of July 2023. They say it's delay, and they said following this, they looked at other customers, and they said, oh, there's quite a few customers, four specific customers actually, who are in delay in paying them, which amounts to 1.1 million. These customers are based in Nepal, Myanmar, and Bangladesh. And in fact, it comes down to the bottom line is, based on current assumptions and management forecasts, they require additional external funding in the final quarter of the financial year. So that's essentially why it's dropped. You're going to have to raise money. And we know in this market, it's not easy to raise money. So they're down 45. That's made it a lot harder than to raise money. And
it's a shocker. It's an absolute shocker. You know, one thing I would say there, you know, there's two things to observe. One is, you know, customer concentration is always very, very bad, or not always very, very bad, but has the potential to go very bad. So if you are reliant on one or two, a small company reliant on, you know, one or two, or even a small handful of large customers for your revenues, and that goes, then, you know, you are in trouble like this. And the other is, you know, if you're investing in a business that's selling into these industries, you really ought to know who the end customers are. And sort of, you know, their credit worthiness. And, you know, in this instance, it looks like Pilatro has fallen foul of both of those challenges that small businesses often face.
Yeah, but also, you know, in a tough market, things get tougher generally. You know, your customers are suffering as well as you are.
Precisely.
So, I mean, look at that share price. You've gone down from, like, literally, if you're going back to 2019, it was 90 pence a share. And it's gone out of 4 pence a share. And even now, if you've been holding on here, seen a bit of a rally, think, oh, hang on, good times are back, and they dropped again, almost 50%. That is painful. Another one of the losers today is you know, oil and gas, 8.7 million. But they've got a lot of, well, you know, you always see, when I read companies, you know, financial updates and all that stuff, when they, there's a lot of operational stuff with no figures in. I think, hang on, there's something not quite right with the financials here, you know. And the further you have to scroll down, normally, the worse the financials are. In fact, they're not that bad, but you know, they are down. So, financial summaries, revenues first half of the year, especially 6.4. down 0.9.8 with the average realized bottom.
Well, I mean, you would expect that to an extent based on the fact that the oil price is lower this year. You know, arguably $105 a barrel is super normal. So you know, there should be an expectation that would happen. I noticed a little line up the top. They're talking about declining production for a particular well. So you know, you don't want to see that. It's I mean, there you go. Result difficulty in foreign exchange costs to repatriate funds. Crikey. You don't want to hear that.
No.
Yeah, I want to hear that.
So they've gone down to, they've got cash of $550,000 there, down from 3.8. They said cash collection appear remains strong at 7 million, but like I said, notwithstanding this,
can't get it back.
Yeah, did reduce, we continue to manage our working capital position across the group. So
I just think this is going to become a, you know, increasingly a feature of, this is a market shakeout, you know, the kind of the weak will disappear. You know, sort of wither away on the vine to not very much at all. And if they, you know, if companies have working capital issues and can't raise, then, you know, that's it. As I said, it goes back to what I said before, you know, don't punt on recovery of companies that have had these sort of problems, but look instead for quality companies that have been sort of, you know, the baby that's been chucked out with the bathwater.
Yeah. Look at the most read RNSs, top three, pretty much. Well, two companies involved in the top three, but it's all about it's all about boardroom stuff, pretty much. And Boohoo and Revolution Beauty are finally, you know, finished their spat. They come to the end of the round and they're both knackered, I think, or one of them decided, okay, let's stop fighting. It's not good for any of our companies. Let's try and come up with some agreement. And the agreement is, pretty much, you have to go into Revolution Beauty's RNS for more detail. But Bob Holt and Derek Zisman have agreed to resign from Revolution Beauty. Bob Holt's the CEO. You know, he replaced the founder. And it seems like the Boohoo guys are coming in. So it seems to me like the Boohoo has got the upper hand here.
Well, they've won, haven't they? This is what Revolution accused them of, a sort of, you know, an underhand takeover attempt. And that appears to be exactly what's happening.
Yeah. Elizabeth Lake will remain as CFO, removing the previous concerns that the full year accounts for 2023 could be delayed and the company's trading aim once again threatened. So I don't know how long she'd be there until that. The company will retain its existing executive leadership in the interim period as a CEO search is being commenced. But yes, I think Bob still gets his options and stuff like that. But they said it's, you know, for the interest of the company, pretty much. But
there
you go. And also at Bidstack, it's a requisition to remove Glenn Calvert. He's now going. He's indicated he no longer wants to stay. Who else was there? It was somebody else, Don Stewart. The requisition wasn't for him to stand down. It was Lisa Howe and Glenn Calvert, but he's standing down. Don's had enough. He's out. But there's a lot of activism going on here. And so we can see boardroom sort of machinations. In fact, let's look at what's happened to the Rev B, the share price of that. Has it... Not a lot happening there with Rev B. Has Boohoo moved? I doubt it.
I would be surprised.
No. Let's look at Bidstack. Has that gone anywhere? It's gone down a little. Nothing really happening there.
Just moving the deck chairs on the Titanic feel about it.
Yeah, yeah. And some of the most followed companies, Good Energy, is there. In fact, Guy did ask yesterday, and I said I held some. But I do like them. Do you know what I did last night, actually? I went into looking at who Good Energy. They have 1,700 independent producers of 100% clean, renewable energy. And they're big into companies, you know, greenwashing. They say, we don't do any of that. And there are companies out there doing that. And in fact, it's nice stories. If you go on their YouTube page, you can see these 1,700 independent producers. And they're everything from little community centers to people in Wales with hydro powers. But they source their power from 1,700 of these people. And they supply that on to things.
It's really quite interesting. It's, you know, sort of distributed generation.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's what we have with renewables already, but small scale generation as well is quite interesting. One thing I do know, and I was reading something this week about National Grid. In fact, I've been speaking to lots of people in the renewables industry quite recently. The grid is still struggling to plug a lot of this stuff into it, and there's a lot of money that needs to go into the National Grid over the next few years for these connection agreements. It's quite interesting. It's a great thing. It's where we should be going. Rather than sort of building their vastly expensive nuclear power stations that will take 15 years to come on stream. Build them anyway, because we're going to need it in the future. But we can't rely on it in the short term. And there are so many sort of solutions you can do at a community level, whether that's, you know, big ground source schemes, solar schemes, you know, community wind schemes. We have virtually no hydro in this country, which is insane. We've got a lot of coast, that would be tidal, and a lot of rivers, but we don't do very much at all. Unlike Sweden, which is very hydro, but then they've got mountains. I like this. But the thing to keep an eye on always for me is the grid.
Well, do you know what's nice about this? It's like, if you look at it, right, they're going for the decentralization of, you know, energy. And it works because there's a lot of businesses in there and we're quite ahead of their time. And like there's one, for example, I don't know what he was in England somewhere, but he's got a farm, produces broccoli and all that stuff. And it's completely, you know, renewable. So everything he does, he has solar there, he has wind turbines there. And anything he doesn't use, he feeds back into the grid via Good Energy. Yeah. And it's excellent. Everyone can do this. Everyone can do this. It'll take them investment, but it's worth it because you'll save money over time and just feel good about pay money back into the system, and it works. Anyway, and just one other story is stuff about apparently the music tourism is doing well. Music tourism generated 6.6 billion spending in the UK in 2022, attracting 14 million international and domestic tourists. Just about a million of those are from abroad. So that's because of resurgence in that since COVID. And lastly, there's been issues for a long time in China with property, isn't there? A lot of people they don't trust the market, stock market too much. They have their money in cash or in property. But Evergrande announced that they had an $81 billion loss in 2021-22. And so they got $300 billion dollars of debts.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm surprised it's still afloat. Really, yeah. I think it's a huge. This is where it all really sort of started to kick off. Looking back, I think it would have been around September 21 when this thing started to go, when the cracks started to show in Evergrande, and in fact, as in the Chinese property market as a whole. You know, and there were big concerns at the time. This was sort of China's layman moment, given how much of the country's wealth is tied up in property.
Which is almost like a car crash in slow motion. A lot of people said it's going to happen. And what's worrying is that China now hasn't expanded, out of COVID, haven't recovered out of the COVID, and they can't as easily just issue more debt. There's a lot of debt there already.
They're
a little bit worried. And so they can't just ease up and just spend willy-nilly, the government now, to stimulate growth, because the debt levels are quite high. And there's a lot of sort of ghost town zombie buildings being built with no one living in them. And a lot of them not being completed. So thinking, whereas before in the great financial crash, China was still growing and everyone else was, and they sort of supported the industry a bit. It's a bit worrying. It's when will this, slow motion car crash, when will it actually, the impact happen? Because as yet it hasn't, but it's been lingering for years and years and years. It may go on for years and years and years, but sooner or later there's an inevitability about it, that it will happen. Something bad will happen. But so there we are. That's on a good note. Don't forget, tomorrow, big news, CPI. Will it move the markets? If you want to catch us live, don't forget, hit that subscribe button on YouTube, and we'll speak tomorrow. Cheers, John. Speak then.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.